Good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all today about other tobacco product use among sexual minority young adult bar patrons. Before I begin, I would like to acknowledge my collaborators. Pam Ling is one of my mentors, and she was the PI of this project. And Nadra Leisha is actually in the audience, and I'd like to thank her as well for all of her assistance on this project, as well as the NCI and Rescue Social Change Group, who assisted with this data collection. So we know in general that sexual minorities, so lesbians, gay men, bisexual men and women, use all substances at higher rates than their heterosexual counterparts. We have known for decades that LGBT individuals use alcohol at higher rates, that they smoke at very high rates, and also use other illicit drugs at very high rates. And the smoking disparity is actually one of the more well-documented LGBT health issues outside of HIV/AIDS. And we know, based on large nationally representative samples now, we can quantify this disparity and say that 20% of people in the U.S. smoke, but it's more like 1 in 3 when it comes to LGBT individuals. And so LGBT people smoke cigarettes about 68% higher than the rest of the population. However, less attention has been placed. We know less about the use of other tobacco products among sexual minorities. There has been a study that looked at this among young adults, and they found, as you would expect, that the prevalence of any tobacco product use was highest among this group, but also that the prevalence of dual use, so LGBT individuals who were smoking, where many more of them were also using another tobacco product. And also the authors of this study found that alcohol use was a predictor of initiating tobacco use among this population. So you might be wondering, why is it that sexual minorities smoke more, and really in general abuse all substances more than the general population? And we think first about how there are factors that predispose anyone in the population to smoke or use substances more. So examples would be depression, anxiety, stress, other mental illness, as well as experiencing trauma and victimization. And this happens at higher percentages among sexual minorities. But there are also risk factors specific to sexual minorities, and some work with youth has found that if a young person experiences a very negative reaction to coming out, or if they are, their families have very negative reactions, that this also predicts substance use. And we also have the tobacco industry influence. And certainly the tobacco industry targets all groups, there's no one that would be immune from that. But the LGBT community has had a somewhat unique history with the tobacco industry, in that the tobacco companies were the first Fortune 500 company to actually target the LGBT community, to start running these product ads in their press. They were some of the first companies to have protections for LGBT employees. They were well known, taking out ads like, "We care about you and your community, we'll stand behind you when people discriminate against you." And there were early focus groups with people in the LGBT community who would say, "We think this is very positive that we're receiving this attention. We feel like we're not invisible. We feel like this really means something to us that these tobacco companies are reaching out." And they also were some of the earliest donors to the HIV/AIDS charities and organizations. They certainly were very helpful at a time when there was not much money focused to this very dire health issue in this community. So certainly this could play a role in this smoking disparity. And now, as you see from this ad, they much more blatantly target LGBT individuals. It's not just running ads in the gay press, but they equate smoking with freedom, with pride. They sponsor pride events, very embedded in the community. And another interesting risk for the use of substances in this community is the role of bars. Particularly important for this topic because we surveyed young adult bar goers. So as you see the picture of Stonewall, I'm sure most, if not all of you, are aware that this bar is iconic in terms of the LGBT civil rights movement. But for many decades, an LGBT bar, a gay bar, was the place that you could go find other gay people, a place you could feel relatively safe. But historically, and even now in some cities, they're very smoky places. There's a strong correlation between drinking and smoking. And I actually, the picture there, that's the free pack picture, this came from an LGBT tobacco group in California doing work in the bars. They went out and, you know, were given coupons. You know, you can buy this cigarette for $1 if you spend it today while you're at this bar. So certainly the role of bars in the community may also play a role. So the aims of this project were to describe other tobacco product use among sexual minorities, and we compare lesbian and bisexual females and gay and bisexual males to their heterosexual counterparts because of, there are differences between the genders in which other tobacco products people typically use. And we also wanted to describe multiple tobacco product use, and we define this as someone who is smoking but also using another type of tobacco product. The population for this study was recruited through something called time location sampling, and this is something used commonly when recruiting a hard to reach population. So it's more, it's been used a lot in people who are trying to survey, for example, long distance truck drivers, sex workers, people who, you know, that you may otherwise have trouble reaching. And the way they did this were they went into these young adult communities of bar goers and asked thought leaders to tell them, where do you go to the bar? Where are the most popular places? What times do you normally go? Created a sampling frame, and then you randomly select a time and location, go to that bar, and attempt to survey every person of this appropriate age range, which is 18 to 30. Participants were recruited at bars from seven U.S. cities: San Diego, L.A., San Francisco, Oklahoma City, Albuquerque, Tucson, and Nashville. And this sample for this study is around 8,000 people recruited between 2012 and 2014, and more than 1,000 of them self-identified as lesbian, bisexual, or gay. We conducted a series of logistic regressions examining sexual orientation and use, non-use of five alternative tobacco products. So we looked at black and mild, chewing tobacco, e-cigarettes, hookah, and snus. And this was adjusted for age, education, race, ethnicity. And again, we did compare sexual minority women and men separately to their heterosexual counterparts. And we found that gay and bisexual men have a higher risk of using combustible other tobacco products. So they're more likely to use black and mild as well as hookah. And you can actually see this among all of the different tobacco products that we looked at. Gay and bisexual men have a higher risk also of using non-combustible other tobacco products, including electronic cigarette use, chew, and also snus. And you can see with snus, it's about twice the risk. Lesbian and bisexual women also have a higher risk of using combustible tobacco products. As you can see, more than twice the risk of using black and mild, and more likely to also use hookah. And you can see here another notable thing is the disparity among African American women at being three times as likely to be using a black and mild. And again, so just to highlight, the sexual minorities were more likely in every category to use this type of other tobacco product. So lesbian and bisexual women more likely to use an electronic cigarette, chew, and also snus. And then we also did another analysis where we looked at the risk of using multiple tobacco products. So someone who is smoking as well as using a different type of product. And again, gay and bisexual men as well as lesbian and bisexual women more likely to use multiple tobacco products even after controlling for age, race, ethnicity, and education. And another important note about this is in a high-risk population that already has a high smoking rate. So in this data set of these bargoers, the smoking prevalence is often, in the various cities, around 40%, which is, of course, much higher than that city's actual prevalence. And even among this high-risk group, we see that sexual minorities are using multiple tobacco products, other tobacco products, and smoking at even higher rates than that. So what I would like for you to take home from this is that sexual minorities are at a higher risk for using all other tobacco products compared to heterosexuals. The risk varies by product, with sexual minorities particularly more likely to use snus. So we see among both groups it's twice the risk. And particularly women are at high risk for using multiple tobacco products, so smoking and using another tobacco product. The implications for this are, first of all, that we can, I think that this clearly points to, there's a social norm, the social norm being different in this community. We talked about all the reasons, the historical bars, the tobacco industry marketing. And so since we see in these young adults going to the bars such high rates of other tobacco product uses, that bar-based campaigns that were really focused on changing the social norms around smoking in LGBT bars have a strong potential of bringing this down. And in addition, we need to think about including information on dual use and other tobacco products in cessation programs for LGBT clients. There are some programs that are out there that are tailored specifically for the LGBT patient or client, and this could obviously be, this might be one reason why LGBT people, even though they express the same interest in smoking cessation, are less successful. It might be because of they are complicating their cessation attempt, have a complicated cessation attempt due to their other tobacco product use. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our next presenter is going to be talking about, as soon as I put my glasses on and can see, framing tobacco as a social, as a youth social justice issue. It's Carly Comente, and Ms. Comente is the project manager for the 84 movement at the Health Resources in Action. As a youth advocate since the year since 2000, Carly has extensive experience in the field. She has worked heavily on smoke-free campaigns ranging from local campus-wide policies to national policies while living in Spain. She has also worked for the American Lung Association and the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. And she also holds a master's degree in tobacco addiction. So with that, I welcome Carly Comente.